on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Be welcome to another edition of the Orient Hour. I'm Andy Gilson, and joined in the studio at the moment by Darren Burrows. We've been peering out the window with our binoculars, like one of our aircraft is missing, and Barry Galvin's not here yet. Darren,
he's late, and we will tell him off when he gets here, Andy. That's for sure.
Yeah, nothing like lateness, is there?
We'll be discussing it off air. It was a pet hate of both of ours, isn't it? Lateness, but we'll rib him.
Either that, or we shall leave him pitifully clawing at the glass, trying to get into the building, shall we? I don't know which way we'll deal with him.
Harsh but fair.
Well, first of all, Dale, let's just cast back to Saturday's match, shall we? And before we hear from Dave and Joby about last night, let's talk about Saturday, because it wasn't good, was it?
Not really, no. I felt that we seemed to sort of give them a bit too much respect in the first instance, Andy. And look, you know, they're a good side, but is there a good side in this division?
No.
I actually don't think there is, no.
No, I agree with you, there's not. And that's the annoying thing, is that you know that there was a chance there. As much as people have been criticising them, you know, there was enough there, if they'd all got it together, to have made a challenge.
I think there's enough in the team that we've got in terms of quality and talent. I personally feel that we can match anyone on it, but it's on our day, isn't it? And their inconsistency is a trait in League Two. We know that. That's why players play at that level. And you've got to find that consistency. But one interesting thing I found, Andy, over watching the last two games, and I don't know what your views are on this, but both Cheltenham and Harrogate had quality young loan players from Premier League clubs.
Mm.
And we've got Akinola, as we all know, who I think arguably has been one of our most consistent and best players since he's been at the club.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things I would throw out there is, have we made good enough use of the loan market this season? I don't think we have.
No, I think most people would agree with you. I mean, I've heard, I don't know for certain, that we were offered players, but they weren't taken up. And if that's true, that's a question for the club to look at themselves and question if that was the right decision. It may be that budgets didn't allow, if they had to pay for them, that is. I mean, it may well be that they were offered them. But either way round, it's not been good enough, has it?
No, it's not been. The season is petering out now, frankly.
Mm.
I think last night's result nailed our final coffin, now with the final coffin in the coffin, was the crude way of putting it. But
yeah, I mean, it's mathematically still possible, of course, but it's getting more increasingly difficult with every game.
I agree, it's mathematically still possible. I just don't think we've got quite enough. I think the new manager bounce, which Joby gave us, worked for a bit. But I think now that it's going to be a real gambling man or person who's going to put their money on or in making the playoffs, personally, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, what we're going to do, folks, is the program's going to be two halves, really. The first half, we're going to hear from Dave and Matt and from Joby shortly, and then we're going to discuss about players, etc., and contracts who stand and going, etc. And then we've got Matt Lockwood joining us to talk over his time in football, and he'll be joining us live around about 7:30, and we'll have a chat with Matt then to take us through. And as I'm saying that, there's this pathetic little face at the window of the studio. Darren, if you could turn and leave your chair and open the studio door for the man whose timekeeping is appalling, Barry Galvin, and he's just coming into the studio as we speak. I don't know what feeble set of excuses we've got for his lateness. Barry, would you like to explain yourself to the listeners?
No.
I'll turn your mic up and you might be able to.
No.
No. You don't want to explain.
Like a naughty school child.
Yeah, so time, right? You go and sit in the corner, face the wall, and don't turn around until I tell you.
You make me do that every time, anyway.
I know, it's a little game we play. Right, let's cast our thoughts to last night. And it was, at times chaotic, eventful. Some of the defending, you have to say, were borderline embarrassing. But let's hear, first of all, what our commentary team of Matt and Dave Hiscock Matt Hiscock and Dave Victor had to say, even.
Well, Matt, thanks for joining us. It was a tough night for the O's, wasn't it?
Yeah, disappointing night, of course. Came into the game feeling the O's needed to take the maximum 3 points, and they had opportunities. It was an incredibly open second half. It was an entertaining second half, but unfortunately, it didn't go the O's way.
The O's haven't conceded, and many under Joby McAnuff, and having twice taken the lead in the second half, he'll be disappointed with the manner in which both goals were conceded.
Yeah, they were sloppy, and there was moments in the game you just felt, building up to that, where the O's just lost their concentration at critical points. And Harrogate, give credit to them, a team with 5 defeats in their last 6 games. Twice they went behind, twice they fought back, but as you say, the goals the O's conceded, very sloppy.
And it's got to be taken into the context with a disappointing result at home to Walsall, and then of course losing at a very strong Cheltenham team.
Yeah, definitely. Look, the O's didn't lose playoff hopes tonight. Mathematically, of course, you can still look at it and say there's an opportunity, but as the table stands right now, 4 points behind that playoff position, an inferior goal difference to many teams around them, and of course they all have a game in hand. You feel now the O's have got to win every game until the end of the season to give themselves any opportunity. But tonight, as I say, we expected the win. We hoped for the win. It didn't come. But you look back at the 3 home games in recent weeks, the 0-0 draws with Stevenage, Scunthorpe and Walsall, they were the games that potentially have hurt the O's playoff ambitions.
Chairman Nigel Travis is over. He's going to see tonight's game. He'll also see Saturday's visit of Barrow. And he's here for the AGM tomorrow. One of the questions will be about Joby McAnuff's future.
Yeah, it was interesting. We spoke to him at half-time and he made it quite clear there that no decision has been made as yet. And it was quite interesting to listen to, and I'm sure those that were listening in were enjoying listening to the chairman, who's back over here for a few games, or a couple of games at least. And I think it will definitely be worth tuning in to listen to the AGM and the questions that, of course, will be proposed, not only on the financial side, but the footballing side and his plans for next season.
He was very clear when he appointed Joby McAnuff that the target was the playoffs. It's still possible, but it's a tall order now, isn't it?
Monumental order, Dave. As I say, for me, you have to win every game between now and the end of the campaign. The teams above them.
And that might still be enough.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it is going to be a massive, massive ask. But as I say, you look at the form in recent weeks, you look at Joby's return overall, it's not too bad at all. He's instilled discipline in the team. You look at the way the O's have shaped up, a lot of 1-0 wins in that team, but they've just fallen short on a few occasions, and that's the difference between getting yourself in the playoffs and not.
Can I play devil's advocate? he didn't play against Walsall, he didn't play against Cheltenham, and he took himself off just before Harrogate grabbed their goal.
Yeah, look, for me, I think I've said it to you before, Joby McAnuff is still one of the leaders on the pitch. You need him on the pitch. These are massive games. Every game's been massive. All right, you look at his age, but his fitness levels, for me, haven't dropped. I know he's had that period. I think it's more the decision from him. He feels that he wants to be on the sidelines, but we know with that, of course, he's a loss on the pitch tonight. He started in the game, and as you rightly say, he came off. Unfortunately, O's weren't able to go on and grab a winner. They needed leaders in the final stages. There wasn't quite enough out there.
Well, sorry for Dan Johnson. He's not got a lot of service, not been a lot of assists. I think 6 from Brophy, 5 from Joby McAnuff.
Yeah, and probably 10 from the opposition. And he got another one tonight, didn't he? He was incredible. The goal he scored, again, the opposition giving him a real helping hand. But for me, he's been a massive plus for the season. I know he went through a little bit of a run, as all strikers do. But he's one of those, he's always in and around the box. And when he gets his opportunity, he quite often tucks it away. 19 goals for the campaign is a massive feat. Let's hope he gets to 20 and beyond.
You never know. It's one of the targets that remain for the rest of the season. We do it all again on Saturday, Barrow of the Visitors. And, of course, that is a 12:30 kickoff.
Yeah, different sort of fixture, isn't it? Of course, in respect of the Duke of Edinburgh, 12:30. Of course, Barrow will travel overnight. And they're a team who've won this evening and now a 9-point cushion from the drop. What a turnaround it's been for them. They'll present a difficult challenge. A team that's in a little bit of form. So something different for the O's to think about come Saturday.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Matt.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thank you, Matt. And shortly after that, Dave went down pitch side and had a chat with manager Joby McAnuff.
Joby, thanks for joining us. It was a tough night, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think immediate reaction is, you know, having got ourselves into winning positions twice. It's certainly a big missed opportunity in terms of getting the win. I think we rode our luck at times, that was for sure. Defensively, we looked all at sea at sometimes. It's not like us. We've looked very, very solid for the vast majority of the time, certainly since I've been in charge. That certainly wasn't the case today. I just felt there was a bit of a nervousness around our defending situations, a little bit panicky. Obviously resulted in a penalty which we got away with, but again, just generally towards the end we just looked a little bit on edge. So that was probably the biggest disappointment, that we didn't go on, especially after getting 2-1 in the lead and kind of seeing a game out.
Because both goals were well taken, weren't they?
Yes, from our point of view, we've come away from home and scored 2 goals. We should be winning the game. It's as simple as that. But again, from our point of view, there's certainly things that we need to look at and put right, certainly come Saturday.
Had Conor Wilkinson picked up a knock for the change?
Yeah, he wasn't feeling great. A little bit dizzy, didn't feel like he had any energy. So again, at that point in the game, we're obviously trying to win it. We need lads out there that are going to make a positive influence. I thought Louis actually came on and did really well and showed certainly what he's capable of. So again, that's what I want to see, that's what I need to see, that impact. And he certainly gave me that off the bench. So again, it's about everyone pitching in and being as near to 100% as they can for this last little push.
And Dan Johnson, he's so good when there's a mistake at the back.
Yeah, he's a poacher, you know. He works his socks off, and that enables him to get in those positions a lot of the times. But he's got great anticipation, and obviously for us, more times than not, he's been at the right place at the right time this year.
There were a couple of late chances.
Yeah, again, disappointed we didn't take them, I've got to be honest. I think there were good opportunities to win the game, but at the same time, you know, I've got to be objective and say, you know, we can't be looking to score 3 times every time we come away from home to win a game, you know. And certainly my issue today was the defensive side of things rather than the attacking side.
You have a lot of options, particularly in the defence. Jamie Turley's been outstanding recently. Your thoughts why he wasn't included?
Yeah, I had a good chat with Turles. It's probably the most football he's played for a very, very long time. Started 10 games on the bounce, which I don't even think he knows the last time he did that, to be honest. And I just felt on Saturday, just caught up with him a little bit, bit off the pace. Again, we've got options, we've got people that are fresh, and at this stage of the season, for me, that freshness, that ability to you know, really have that energy around the pitch is very, very important. So it's a little bit of a reset for him. You know, we'll use the week to get him back. He's been absolutely fantastic for me, and certainly, you know, he'll be better for it on Saturday for this last push.
The point takes you one place up the table. Are you still thinking about the playoffs?
We have to be. You know, as I said, from the minute I came in, there has to be a goal. There has to be something to work towards, you know, to keep that drive, to keep that focus, that energy moving forward. And listen, while we've got a chance, while we are in the race, we're going to go for it. You know, we want to take it as late as possible. You know, if we've got a chance going into that last day, then we'll take it. You know, so we've got to win games now. We know that. We need to win football matches. You know, nothing less will do really from here on in. And certainly on Saturday, that's going to be our intent. We need to go out and get 3 points.
Is Conor a doubt for Saturday?
Hopefully not. Again, it was more a case of just how he felt as the game went on. He didn't feel like he was himself, really. And again, for me, it's massive that we have people out there that are 100%. We've got people chomping at the bit, training really well, wanting to come on and make an impact. So when the opportunity arises, of course, I've got to give those boys a chance. And as I said today, I was happy with their response, lads, that come on.
Finally for me, Joby, any other knocks?
No, I think we were all good. From our point of view, again, we're getting back to a near full bill of health. You know, Ruel's coming along okay, Lee's coming along okay, and that again increases competition, and that's what I want. I want people pushing. You know, I want hard decisions to make, and ultimately the players are the ones that are going to make my mind up in terms of who plays.
Thanks, Joby.
Cheers,
mate. Thank you.
There we go, and that was Dave Victor talking to Joby McEnough after last night's 2-2 draw with Harrogate. And thank you, Dave, once again for letting us have your reports. And Barry, come to you first of all, and I think Joby hit the nail on the head there. The disappointing factor, he didn't expect to have to come away and get 3 goals away from home to get the points, and he was very disappointed with the defending. I think disappointed with the defending would be an understatement, wouldn't it?
Well, yes. I think Harrogate Town will be disappointed as well. I think all 4 goals last night were ridiculous. I'm quite fair in my assessment. I try not to be, but there was just none of those goals should have been goals. Yeah. Simple as that from both teams' point of views. And, you know, having been fortunate enough to get ourselves ahead, and we were fortunate because they missed 2, maybe 3 sitters, what you would class as sitters, then, you know, having been fortunate enough to get ourselves ahead and then had the penalty save, which is credit to Lawrence Figueroa, but it wasn't the best pen in the world, let's be fair. But he saved it, got to save him, and he saved it. And then you're thinking, this is our night, you know, we've got away with this. And then we conceded another poor goal. And, it wasn't great last night. I mean, it's strange, isn't it? We haven't looked that bad at the back all season, really, despite the run we went on where we didn't win a lot. We weren't conceding hatfuls, apart from the 1-4-0, the Exeter one, obviously, before people pull me up on that. But last night, we could have easily conceded 5, easily. Last night it was a strange game. It, a game we certainly didn't deserve to win, but having got in front, I was gutted that we hadn't won it. You know?
That's the thing, though, Darren. It's not whether you deserve it sometimes. It's to be professional enough to have taken the opportunity. You've been in front and you've been in front again, and that's where the professionalism comes in, isn't it? You're not playing particularly well, but you shut up shop and you get out of the building with the points, even though you've not played particularly well.
Absolutely, Andy. I think the professionalism last night that you're talking about was sadly lacking, wasn't it? There wasn't the levels of atticness that we needed. There was a period where I thought, yeah, okay, they look like they want to hold on to this. But they didn't. And the bottom line is, the goals, as Barry rightly said, I back him 100% on that, well, they were terrible goals to concede by both sets of...
Well, it was, as I said, one of the tweets, it was Hackney Marsh's stuff, and it wasn't... That's not an exaggeration. I mean...
I've played football, we've all played football. Yeah. At any level, you concede pretty much any of those goals, you're looking at, oh, what have we done there?
Yeah.
You know, especially the back header for Danny Johnson's goal.
I mean, that was ridiculous. Appalling, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, the whole thing was a comedy of errors, wasn't it? But, I mean, you watch... I mean, there were some changes made to the side. And, you know, I mean, do you think that, in hindsight, that wasn't the right decision?
Look, managers live and die by their decisions, don't they? And what you often find, I think, anyway, is when you get a new manager, young manager, inexperienced manager, he wants to make decisions. That's what he wants to do. He wants to be seen to be making decisions. And someone once said to me, any decision in business is better than no decision. And I kind of get that. But football, sometimes I think, just leave it alone. Just leave it alone. And we kept saying, don't change a winning team. And Joby's rationale for changing with Turley being tied, I find that quite a bitter pill to swallow, frankly.
Did you say tired?
He rested Turley, didn't he?
He's been one of our best players, if not the most solid player in the last four or five games. Now, I understand, obviously, he might have been a bit leggy, but I certainly maybe would have given him the opportunity.
Well, he should have played 10 games, Barry, yeah? Mm. And that's why he had a chat with him and rested him. Mm. Now, if you're a professional footballer and you're tired after 10 games, well, I call into question a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of Saturday chooses, haven't there? But I tend to agree that you play your best side.
Yeah. I think it was Jarvie wanting to make a decision.
Well, I think with people like Turley, to me, they're a player you'd keep hold of and you keep in a squad because they're a no-nonsense, no-frills, but no-nonsense sort of player, and he can play in more than one position. And, you know, he'll just get rid of it. There'd be no-frills, nothing like that. But he's going to not be a person you want to bump into. He's going to put in some crunching tackles. He'll pick up the cards here and there, but he'll do a job. And if you've got, say, for want of a better word, a more cultured players around him, that surely is the way forward.
Yeah, I mean, talking of more cultured players, as we're talking about a performance last night, Dan Happy was uncharacteristically
uncultured.
last night, within the first 10, 15 minutes. He made more mistakes in the first 10 or 15 minutes last night than he's made in the last 10 or 15 games.
Do you know,
and
Barry,
he's entitled to have a bad game, and I rate him, he's a good player. I like his old man, so he's a great guy.
Yeah, I mean,
but
Christian,
I'm just saying that he was uncharacteristically sloppy last night.
Well, Christian Wheeler was saying on here that, you know, if you'd asked him a few months ago, he would have put Dan Happy down as one to go on and on and on. But he said he's stagnated and he hasn't, you know, if anything, he's gone backwards a bit. Now, would you agree with that, Darren?
I'm not a huge Happy fan, guys. I think he's too slow. I think his decision making at times, and last night proved it, can be found wanting. And I'm not somebody that particularly feels that he's a player that I'm worried about leaving, frankly. And that might sound harsh, but that's my honest opinion and assessment of the lad.
Yeah, because that's a player, if you'd asked me a year ago, I'd have said, you've got a big price ticket on his head. No,
I still think he's a good player. I think he's not. He's maybe not made the progress that maybe some people were expecting, but last night he won't have that on his show, real.
One thing I also, as well, is we're at the crossroads now with contracts, I would imagine.
Definitely.
They'll be trying to get players to re-sign, and some of these players will be holding out to see what's offering the summer. Mm. And I'm not saying Dan Happ's one of them. I don't know. I'm not that knowledgeable about what's going on in that respect. But he's playing like he's one of them for me at times.
Well, what I don't get, Darren, unless I've read it wrong, is that they've told the players who are not going to be staying that they're not going to be staying. Now, that's all well and good in my book if you've got a player who's a fringe player and maybe played once this season or something like that. He almost expects it anyway. But if you've got players that are still in and out the squad and still playing, how committed are they going to be knowing that they're not going to get a contract? I find that very strange, Barry.
Well, it depends which way you look at that, doesn't it? Because you could say, well, they're not going to be committed to the cause, or you could say they want to, any game time they do get, they're in a shop window, trying to get himself a contract elsewhere. Mm. So it depends on the character of the player. Myself, I'll be right, every opportunity I get, I'm going to try and show other teams that I'm worth signing.
It should be like that, Barry. I agree with you. But is it always like that? Because that's how we think.
Different characters will react differently. Some will think, well, sod you now, I'm not going to make an effort.
Well, basically that, because what you got to remember, that, it's a job at the end of the day. It's maybe our entertainment, but it's their job. And they've got mortgages and bills to pay and they're thinking, Christ, I've got to find another job. I'm losing my job in a month's time or whatever, 2 months' time. And the wife's having, oh God, what are we going to do to pay the bills, blah, blah, blah. And you've got all this going on in the background and you're asking them to be focused and give 100% and look good. I just find it very strange that you've told them this early. I mean, unless they're legally...
Is that standard?
If they're legally obliged to do that, then fair enough. If it says you will be given 2-3 months' notice...
There is a date. But, I'm not sure what that date is, but there is a date with the clubs. Well, there is a date, and forgive me, guys, I don't know the exact date, but you're quite right. There is a definite date that they have to let the players know by.
But I think it's a bit early at the moment, isn't it?
I think it's quite a bit later still. Yeah. In all honesty. Yeah. But the I think they know how it works. I think they've been around enough, even the young lads like Happy. The thing is, you talk about the older players needing security, which I get, but Happy's not one in that camp, is he?
He's a young lad.
And I would have felt that... I think they want to keep him. I think the club will want to keep Happy. But I don't see, at the moment, he's playing like he's a lad who deserves a new contract.
No, but is this a case of where man management comes in and people management, if you like, and sitting down with someone and saying, look, you know, we know, you know you're better than what you've been doing. I know you're better. The fans know you're better. Is there something that, you know, maybe on your mind? Is there something you want to talk about? Or it could be a non-footballing problem that's causing somebody, not just Dan Habib, but anybody to not be performing to the top of their ability.
Well,
so
I mean, there's because of COVID, there's a lot of professional footballers that are not going to have a job at the end of this season.
Isn't yeah.
There? So it's extraordinary times, really. So I don't know the answer to that question, but, you know, it's going to be a lot of people looking for employment, professional football-wise, at the end of this season.
Yeah, and that's just before we get Matt ringing in. Just something I touched on before, and it might sound naive, I suppose, in a way, but the club are always looking to be innovative in the way that they're doing things. But I wonder if, you know, you see already how much they're paying in agents' fees and things like that. If they just turn around and said, you know what? We're not going to deal with agents. We will not deal with agents. We are only going to deal with the player. Right
now, I'd love to see a club do that.
Do you know what? If someone actually said that, and there's hundreds of players going to be unemployed, and you say, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do this differently. We need, let's just pick a position. And say, right, we need a right back. The salary is 60,000 plus odd bonuses, blah, blah, blah. And see who comes forward. There's going to be dozens of players unemployed in that position. And I know it's a different way of looking at it. And people might say, you can't do that, blah, blah, blah. But hang on, you can do anything you want. You're in charge. It's
you
your
can,
business.
You'll be the mavericks, the guinea pigs, won't you?
Yeah, but you're not that. Barry, it's not that. It's you're turning around and saying, look, you know, I'm not going to pay an agent those fees. And if a player uses his brain, he can actually probably get an extra few percent for himself because they've not got to give an agent's fee. So there's probably a little bit of room there on the salary side. You know, and just get rid. Do you know they drive me mad, agents? I just think a club that turns around and says, "This is it. This is what we're doing. We're going to speak to you. You're grown, mad old. We are not at this level going to be dealing with agents." End of story.
There's a lot of money in the game, right? Even at our level, there's money in the game, and that's what I'd like to slightly change the subject, but about wage caps in the Premier League. It only takes one person, one country, one FA to be brave enough to say this is our maximum amount that we're going to pay. Amount of professional footballers players play here, then this runaway inflation will stop. And you've got to be the brave ones to do it firstly, but then maybe some of your best players will go to Germany, but then if they do it, some of them go to Italy, then they can realign. But wants to be the first one to do it, like you're saying with the agents.
The clubs, not just Orion, they hold the cards. They hold the cards now. We're at this COVID situation and with the cutbacks that are coming and with people's furlough coming to an end in about September, maybe not having got cash to come to the games that they used to have, etc., etc. Everybody's fighting over a few quid. I'll tell you now that the clubs have got the players by the proverbials and they should put their foot down here and play very hard.
The we could do a whole show on agents. Maybe we should. But there's a couple of things that spring to mind straight away. You said something earlier a minute ago that the players haven't the intelligence.
I didn't say they haven't got the intelligence.
No, you, you said they have. They should have the intelligence.
They haven't got intelligence.
No, you said they have. Now, I'm going to say something a bit controversial. Not something they haven't got the intelligence, but there's a reason they use agents. Yeah, there are reasons clubs. All clubs now.
They can hide
agents.
Behind them and demand things.
And it's not... It's not that. It's one of the reasons. Look at a lot of the clubs in the lower echelons now using agents. What's one of the common denominators? They don't have the scouting networks they used to. So they rely on these agents to pay them fees when they find them people. So they're saving costs there. So no one ever criticised a club or no one ever published the amount of money they spent on scouts. But now they publish what they spend on agents. Oh, it's all these agency fees. The intermediary agency world is one I know very, very, very well. And to understand it to be in it is to understand it. And I'm in it, so I understand it. Mm. And I understand why they spend the money they do. I understand why fans and everybody, pundits and us guys, query it. But believe me, if you try to eradicate this now in the modern game, in the modern world, you're a braver man than me.
Not at our level. This is the thing. I can understand it at the top level where you're dealing with multiple things like sponsorship.
Any level where there's money involved.
Yeah, but we're talking the top two divisions is a different level of money. The bottom two divisions, you're talking the people out in the stands earn what these players are getting. You know, so...
And these people out in the stands use agents.
No, the builder doesn't, does he? I mean, come
on. Yes,
he
does. Yes, he does.
Well, right, you've got a builder, but I'm saying I'm using builder as the wrong bloody thing. But a cabbie doesn't use an agent.
Andy, there's agencies for agencies. Yeah?
Oh, the employment agents.
If you want
agents,
to recruit somebody, yeah, whether you're working in football or any industry, there's an agent for it.
Well, I would never, ever... I always deal with people face to face. I'll never ever bother.
So opposite sides of the fence, yeah.
You know what?
It's healthy. It's
I
good debate.
Like Asians,
if you've got to bring your mum to the table to get the job, I don't want to know. That's the truth, right?
You can't call agencies your.
Well, you know, it's basically. Can you talk to my mum, please? No, I can't talk to your mum. I'm going to talk to you anyway, right? But
I don't know,
talking of which,
football players have got their mum as their agent.
I know. Talking about agents. We've got a secret agent on the phone here from Scotland, I believe. If he's still up there, good evening. Evening to Matt Lockwood.
Evening, how are you?
I'm all right, Matt, mate. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
Good. Well, we had a good chat with you on Sunday evening, didn't we, with the rest of the 2006 lads, which was great fun. But we're going to talk just about you tonight. But we've just been having a natter, just to get your view on it, about agents. And they're all laughing because
welcome, Matt. Welcome. It's Barry. How are you doing? All right.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, we just had. Well, these two are having a ding dong about agents. Well, so he's putting you right in the firing line here.
No, because I know you know you've got a good move up to Forest, etc. But with the exception of somebody jumping up the you know to a higher level at the bottom level of football, do you really need an agent, Matt?
No, you don't.
You should see Burrow's face.
It's one of those where you know agents do serve a purpose, and they are you know some of them are good at what they do. You know, a sort of a lower league player would need help from someone to alert clubs that they're you know either a free agent or they're looking to potentially move. You know, I don't necessarily think you need an agent to negotiate a contract for you at a smaller club because ultimately you'll get what you get. And I think if you speak to 95% of players in, you know, League One and League Two and say, right, did your agent actually get you more money than you were offered in the first place? The answer will be no, because they just don't. And I mean, I never had an agent as a player. You know, Barry always gave me a good contract. You know, I always signed a long-term contract, which ultimately at Orient probably didn't do me any favours because I was then tied in and Barry could then ask for lots of money for me when clubs did come sniffing. But, you know, I went for that route because I didn't want the risk of being out of contract each year, potentially getting injured and then being out of work. So I like the stability and the security of having a long-term contract behind me. And, you know, Barry looked after me all the time. But there was not a hope that if an agent had gone in and knocked on his door and said, right, I'm here to discuss Matt Lockwood's contract, would they have got a penny more? You know, Barry isn't that sort of person. So, you know, I think they definitely do serve a purpose. And I do think players do need help. But for guys that, you know, like myself, if you are loyal to one club and you do stay for longer than, you know, I suppose one duration of a contract, then I don't think you need an agent to renegotiate and take a fee out of that because they wouldn't have got you any more money than you would have got yourself.
But a PFA, don't they? They offer that service to the players anyway to help you with anything like that. You can go to through them?
Yeah, they do. They do. I mean, from memory, I think they do still charge for that, so it's not free.
No, it's not, but it's a few hundred pounds, isn't it? It's not stupid.
It's not anywhere near as much. I mean, I must admit, I did use the PFA when I left Forest and went to Colchester because I know, yeah, I was always a PFA rep at Orient, and I was a PFA rep at Nottingham Forest as well. So I did, you know, I was quite well connected at the PFA, and I did ask Bobby Barnes to come and help me with my move to Colchester, purely and simply because I know he knew the wage structure at Colchester. So I wanted to go in. I knew where I needed to be in the sort of wage structure. And so I just said to him, look, you know, can you just sort of come and do this deal for me? And he did. You know, we had two options. We had a 2-year deal on more money or a 3-year deal on slightly less money. You know, I went for the 2-year deal on more money.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was, you know, delighted. I didn't actually stay there for longer than 2 years because it was brutal down there. But
yeah, but when you did that, was that a sort of a case of you going, right, well, I want to be in the top 20% because I've done X, Y, Z and I've been at this club, and therefore he knows the wage structure, so he will come in at, you know, that top 20% level and say, well, if you want him, he's got to be in with those four or five players, you know, with on their level.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. The PFA know exactly what each player's on. And I didn't ask what the players were on. I don't care what the players were on. But Bobby knew that, you know, me coming from, you know, Nottingham Forest to Colchester, I had to be, you know, one of the top earners. And that was fine. And I got a decent contract at Colchester. Obviously, you know, with the manager getting sacked 3 games after I sort of joined, and then other managers come in and didn't like, well, didn't even give me a chance, to be fair, not even didn't like me. You know, you'd probably speak to any Colchester fan and they'll be like, oh, Matt Lockwood was the worst player we've ever signed. Even though I was probably the best left back they've had in the last 20 years, they'll never know that because I didn't play. you know, you can't go from being sort of like, you know, or being a semi-decent lower league left back to being awful in the space of one sort of injury hit season at Nottingham Forest, that's for sure.
I think we'd say you were better than semi-decent, wouldn't we, Darren? We'd agree.
Definitely, yeah. Despite me being an agent, Matt, no, I'm joking. I am an agent, but not in the football sense, but no, definitely, hero of mine. It's great to be honest to you.
So. You're a hero already, well, Matt, you know that.
But I was going to introduce Matt as probably arguably one of the top five or six crowd favourites of the last 20 or 30 years. It's strange because you started out as a trainee at your hometown club, if you like, Southend. Boo. No, Southend. And they didn't take you on, Matt. What happened there?
long story, but
I've got about 20 minutes gone.
That's fine. Well, basically, I did my 2-year apprenticeship. You know, so I, at 16, I was at West Ham. I got released from West Ham because they didn't think I was big enough or you know, quick enough. Which to me is bizarre that you would judge someone if you thought they were technically gifted, that you wouldn't give them a chance to actually grow. But you know, West Ham decided, right, we're going to go for all the big units that are sort of like at 16, we're all big men by then. They all had the big hairy chests, and you know, none of them grew after they got to 16, where I then obviously developed and came through a little bit later. But so I left West Ham and went to Southend. I did my 2-year apprenticeship there, and I did very well. You know, Barry Fry was the first team manager at the time. He would always get me to train with the first team. You know, if there was one apprentice that went to train, it was me. Whether that was, you know, I was only a first year apprentice at the time, so he took me above all the second years as well. You know, that he really liked me. Then when he left, Peter Taylor came in, and again, Peter really liked me as well. I used to go and train with the first team on a regular basis. But then when he got sacked, you know, because Southend were in the Championship at the time, the equivalent of the Championship now, and they brought in a guy called Stephen Thompson. And I don't think he ever managed after that either, but he was a real hard manager, no nonsense, you know, it's do as I say, don't do as I do sort of thing. And he came in, and his one job was to keep the club in the Championship, which he ended up doing. When it came to the end of my 2-year apprenticeship, the chairman said to Danny Greaves, who was the my youth team manager at the time, he said, right, Dan, who out of the youth team do we sign? And he said, right, there's three players that I would recommend, obviously myself being one of them. The chairman then went to the manager and said, right, what do you think? And he was like, I've no idea. He said, I don't even know their names. He said, I've never watched them play. He said, you employed me to keep the club up. You didn't employ me to choose any of the apprentices who were going to sign. So the chairman turned around and said, and this was Vic Jobson, obviously I know he's passed away now, and but Vic Jobson turned around to Danny and said, right, there hasn't been any youth team players over the last sort of like, you know, 4 or 5 years that have got through into the first team. He said, I want to watch these three players play, and I want to choose, and I'll decide basically who gets the contract. So I got on really well with Danny Greaves, and Danny pulled me and he just said, look, Matt, this is the deal. This is what's happening. You three have got to play in the reserves next week, and he's going to be in the stand, and he's going to basically tell me yes or no whether you get a contract or not. So I was carrying a slight niggle at the time. So I said, look, I'm not playing. I said, I'm not having my career being based on a 90-minute performance when I'm not 100% fit by a guy that, let's be honest, doesn't actually know anything about football. You know, yes, he's made his money in whatever it was, whether it's property or what, I don't know. But he hasn't seen the player I was as a 16-year-old leaving school. He doesn't know how much I've improved. You know, I might go and have a great game, and he turned around and be like, yeah, Matt's brilliant, let's get him under contract. I might have had a stinker. But I wasn't going to risk 2 years of work being judged on a guy that, you know, in my opinion, didn't know anything about football. So I didn't play. The other two did, but they didn't know why they were playing. I watched the game. Those two were awful. And at the end of the game, Vic Jobson turned around to Danny Greaves and said, "No, get rid of a lot of them. None of them are good enough. I'm not interest." So, I basically Danny called me the next day and said, "Look, Matt, I'm devastated to tell you this, but there's nothing here for you." And I was gutted because, as you said, Southend was my hometown team. I grew up there. Mum and Dad lived in the same house for blooming 30 odd years. So, you know, I used to go and watch Southend as a kid. I don't quite know whether that was a punishment or not. My dad used to take me on a Friday night. But anyway, I used to go to Roots Hall every Friday night when they were at home.
Yeah, I was going to say, it used to be Friday night.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to play for my hometown team. And the fact that I was good enough to do it and I never got the opportunity to do it, it did hurt at the time. And then, you know, from there, Danny Greaves sort of said, "Look, you know, this is scandalous. I'm going to really help you guys out and try and get you a sort of a contract somewhere." Then the very next youth team game we were playing was away to QPR. And so before the game, Danny, and again, we didn't actually know that he'd done this, but Danny went and pulled Billy Bonds, who was the QPR youth team manager, and then a guy called Chris Wheeler, who was their sort of like head of youth development or youth sort of recruitment. And he just pulled them before the game and he said, "Look, these three lads, in my opinion, should have been offered pro contracts. Can you just have a look at them and see what you think?" And so I played in that game, and Ray Wilkins was the first team manager at the time at QPR, and he was actually there watching as well. And it was, you know, I played really, really well. I played in central midfield against Nigel Kwasi. You know, I think we ended up, I think it was the game, I think we maybe drew 2-2 or something, but we did really well, played well. But what happened, I had a corner in the second half. And what we used to do is an in-swinging corner. So I went over left foot, swinging it in. And then we had quite a big team. So we had two real big centre-halves and two big centre-forwards. So what I used to do is one hand up meant that all four of those guys had to line up along the goal line. So two in front of the keeper, two behind the keeper, and I would whip it in underneath the crossbar. So did the signal. I whipped it right under the bar. It was perfect delivery, and QPR managed to head it clear. So then it was back out to me for the in-swinging corner. And Ray Wilkins was literally stood 4 yards away from me watching me deliver the first ball. So he said, "Son, do me a favour. Do the same delivery again." So I sort of looked at him and was like, right, okay. So I put my hand up and I whipped it in straight under the bar again. You know, another perfect delivery. And we didn't score from it. We just played on. And that was it. He walked off, went to the first team match because QPR were playing at Loftus Road that afternoon. So he had to go off to do that. And literally after the game, myself and a boy called Steve Parmenter got offered a trial with QPR. So, we went down with the first team for a week. So training with the likes of Les Ferdinand and Trevor Sinclair and Andy Impey and all the Premier League players that they were at the time. Obviously, Ray was the manager. And we went and impressed enough to go and get a contract there. And, you know, to go from being at a championship club at Southend and a small championship club at that to then getting offered a pro contract at a Premier League club in QPR just shows that I was good enough to earn that contract at Southend. And my dad actually was a market trader, and one of the markets that he used to work at was Roots Hall. So he was there on the Thursday that he used to go and work at, and he did for years and years and years. And the chief executive turned up in the car, and my dad couldn't help himself. He went down the stairs and he pulled him, I can't remember his name now, but he pulled him and just said, "Can I have a word?" And he was like, "Yeah, of course." And he said, "Look, I'm Matt Lockwood's dad." He said, "He's just been released from you guys. He goes on a week's trial at a Premier League club and gets offered pro contracts." He said, "How can you do that? How can you let lads go like that are local boys that are desperate to play for your team And they're clearly good enough, yet you get rid of them. And he basically just didn't have an answer. And so from that moment on, yeah, the opportunity to go to Southend never materialised. You know, I went to QPR, then went down to Bristol Rovers. Obviously, from Rovers, I went to Orient. And then as soon as I went in the door at Orient, then, Southend could never afford me. You know, and I would never have gone down there, because in my opinion, it'd have been a step backwards.
Yeah. But do you think that rejection, Matt, early on, it acted, you know, it gave you a bit of a spine and a character build in a way that you fought against that, and that's what drove you on to succeed?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, so I got rejected at West Ham. So at 16, I got released because I wasn't big enough. And the way they released me as well, I was out training and they pulled my dad in and told my dad. He just had to tell me in the car on the way home. So they didn't even have the decency to tell me face to face. You know, so then you go to Southend, get rejected again. You think, right, okay, here we go. But it is character building, because football is a horrible industry. It is full of backstabbers. It's jobs for the boy. It's not a nice industry. People will literally, you know, I don't know what the sort of correct terminology is. But one of the first things that I was taught...
it's a using industry, Matt. It's a using industry. The players use the clubs use the players.
Yeah, no, of course. That's the thing. But when I was an apprentice, one of the first things Danny Greaves taught me, he said, you've got no friends in football, just acquaintances. And you sort of think, no, that's not right. I'm going to have loads of friends. I'm going to have hundreds of friends. And you sort of have, but then when it actually comes down to it and you actually need something and you need help, there's no one there to help you. You know, you are just a piece of meat. And once you're past your sort of sell-by date, you do sort of just get cast aside. And I think in the current climate where we've got all these mental health issues and you see these lads obviously going through bad things and you know, I mean, obviously Lee Collins the other day, wasn't it, at Yeovil? You know, there's some serious dark sort of places that people can get to out there. And these football clubs don't help because, you know, they do treat you so appallingly. And I get it's not their fault. At the end of the day, you know, if you're no use to them, you won't get a contract and you will just be left alone. And there is no aftercare and it's not their place to give you the aftercare. But maybe that needs to then come from the PFA and other sort of bodies to take care of these lads. Because whether it's, you know, just the rejection that you can't handle, or if you're not getting a new contract and then you can't afford to support your family and it's a monetary thing. You know, there's so many different reasons why lads do sort of get into these sort of dark places. And I know, you know, there's so much at the moment about, you know, it's good to talk and please just pick the phone up to someone, don't suffer alone. You know, and the more we can do that and the more we can help people, the better. Because, you know, having lived and breathed it and then come out the other side and now trying to sort of build a life after football, it's not easy. It is not easy. So, you know, if there are people out there that can help and be a shoulder to cry on or just someone to listen and advise, then, you know, that's where I think agents can come into it. If they are that sort of agent where once a player does retire and they can then help them maybe get a job in the real world, as I call it, rather than just saying to that player, right, you're no longer a Premier League player. You're not going to make me any money now. I don't want to talk to you.
Just speak to Darren. Yeah, I'll sort you out. Darren,
yeah, I think the clubs, Matt, are now waking up, for want of a better phrase, to the issues of dealing with players when they can't offer them a contract. I think there are now quite a few academies, aren't there, and other areas. I think it has improved. You'd know better than I would. Do you think it's improved, Matt? Do you think there's now the first signs that clubs are taking some responsibility and offering some support, or do you still think it's a sign?
I think so, but it is difficult from a football club's point of view, because if you have a lad at 18 that isn't good enough and you release him, you know, how much aftercare do you give him? At the end of the day, you know, if you're at a, you know, an elite club at, you know, that has hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds going through that club each year, then they can probably afford to employ someone to make sure that those lads either A, find a new club or find a career, and they can maybe be a liaison to make that happen. But if you're at a Leyton Orient that make ends meet and they do well, but they're run properly, you probably haven't got the finances in place to employ someone to go out and do that.
But the PFA should, Matt, in my opinion, you've got people like Gordon Taylor who's lined his pockets for years for millions of pounds every year for not a lot. And, you know, you could employ a team of ex-professionals like yourself that travel around the country and speak to young players who may be getting rejected or players that are coming to the end of their career or have got problems. And players like yourself who've overcome that adversity and can give advice from experience and maybe, you know, give people a lift and show that there's a chance for them. And surely the PFA should be funding a team of maybe 10 or 12 of you that go out around the country, you know, nationally, up in Scotland as well, etc., with the Scottish FA, you know, to help clubs like that. It shouldn't be down to the clubs necessarily, or you know, surely with all the money that the PFA's got, and if they can pay their top man millions of pounds every year, they can surely afford a team of people to go out on a normal salary to help players.
Yeah, of course you can. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the PFA. I've got nothing but, you know, positive things to say about them. Whenever I've needed them in the past, you know, not that I have really, but, you know, like I said, I was a PFA rep at Orient, at Nottingham Forest, at Colchester. When I came up to Scotland, I was on the management committee of the PFA in Scotland. And don't get me wrong, PFA Scotland haven't got a penny. You know, they don't enjoy the same riches as the PFA in England do. But like you say, when you see the top dog on millions and millions of pounds, and then you see lads that are being released at 30, 31, 32 that can't pay the bills, and then it forces them into doing something stupid, you sort of think, this isn't on.
Yeah.
But it's so difficult, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, Gordon Taylor has been great for the PFA. Whether he's sort of like, you know, he needs to leave now, that looks like it's inevitable, isn't it? I mean, that's all sort of been agreed. But, you know, for him, what he's done over the last 30 years or however long he's been in charge of the PFA has been nothing short of remarkable.
And that's a lot longer than he was a player, that's for certain.
I don't think anyone should underestimate what he's done there. Whether they've, you know, totally agree with it, he has set up a multi-million pound company that has the best, you know, the player's best interest at heart. That's what I feel anyway. I mean, I know lots of people disagree with that. And they think, you know, the PFA is just jobs for the boys, and it's just, you know, keeping all the money in-house, and they're going out and buying all sorts of art, which is in the offices down in Manchester, and it's scandalous, whatever. But I, you know, I think everything they do for the players, they are trying that. But I certainly think that there's an opportunity where, you know, there should be like a recruitment company set up off the back of it, because footballers have got transferable skills. You know, you come out of school and you leave school at 16 and you know, whether you do your exams and then you go straight into football. When you do retire, when you finish, whether it's at 18 or 21, if you don't make the grade, or if you're like me and you play till you're an old cart horse and you can't run anymore, you know, when you finish, you haven't got any experience. You haven't got any qualifications. So when you try and get a job, people are like, oh, well, you haven't got any experience. And I'm like, well, no, I haven't, but I've got transferable skills. I've worked in, you know, an industry where you have to be thick-skinned, where you have to, you know, push yourself and get the best out of, you know, what you physically have yourself. And I have spoken to quite a few people on this, I think there's definitely a market there where firms could actually take advantage of these lads, because there's some bloody talented boys out there that are either fantastic communicators that can go out and probably sell stuff, there's so many different things that these lads could offer. And it's interesting when you look at the different sports. So recently, you know, we sort of did a few things, and I've sort of been meeting quite a few rugby players. And the way rugby players think is completely different to footballers. You know, these guys, and whether it's sort of the stereotypical rugby player who's come from a private school and has been well-educated and has got different sort of contacts, but all those guys get to sort of like late 20s, early 30s, and they're looking to retire because they've got a job as a trainee, a solicitor, or an architect, or, you know, they have the opportunities to do that. Well, I think footballers, their mindset is, well, I'm going to play for as long as possible, and then when I retire, I'll worry about it then. And that's a generalisation, I know, because there are quite a few boys that are really switched on, that are investing in property and to make sure they've got things set up. But it's not enough for me. It's not all of them. And I know, again, the PFA offer advice on pensions and whatnot. I mean, there is no, I don't think there is an answer to this. There's no magic wand you can wave to say, right, ding, this is all going to go away and everyone's going to be fine. But there are certainly, avenues that people could look at to utilise these lads because, as I said, some of these boys are very talented, very motivated, and they could certainly do good things in business or just in sort of like normal life.
Matt, can I change the subject? As fascinating as it is, I've really enjoyed listening to your views on this, and it's something that I really feel that you can make a massive contribution. But I just want to put this out there as a real fan of yours. Can you just talk us through that goal against Hull that you scored for us to take us to this? Can you just tell us what was going through your mind before and after? Because that's the goal for me. That's, of all the goals I've seen scored, the ones at Wembley, that goal really made the hairs in the back of my neck stand up when that ball in the back of that net. Do you mind just sharing that?
Still, even you talking about it there, it makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up as well. Because, you know, I suppose, yeah, it was a good goal, but you see strikes like that every week, don't you, on Football League Review or whatever. But I suppose because it was in such a big game, towards the end of a playoff semi-final that you knew you had to win to get through. Obviously, it wasn't through to Wembley, was it? It was through to the Millennium Stadium. But, you know, I suppose goals like that get sort of put on a pedestal because of the type of game it was.
Yeah.
An important match. But so basically what happened was about 5 minutes before the goal, the ball came to me in a very similar position. And I sort of ran forward and I passed it out wide. And Steve Castle actually said to me, Matty, like next time you get it from there, bloody shoot. If you don't shoot, you're not going to score. So that was still ringing in my ears when the ball fell to me on the halfway line. And I suppose, you know, I had the first touch and I was driving forward as I sort of like to do because, you know, let's be honest, I was much better going forward than I was defending. So, you know, I had the first touch and the right winger sort of moved out to my left and sort of went to block my pass out wide. Had another touch, no one came to me. Had another touch, I'm thinking, all right, this is in range now. And it was just one of those where, you know, you just sort of thought off the back of Steve Castle's advice, if you don't shoot, you don't score. And I always, you know, back my technique from long range. I think, you know, that you guys have probably seen over the years, sort of like, you know, my passing and my long range sort of striking was always half decent. So I just thought, right, let's have a go. And as soon as I hit it, literally as soon as it left my boot, I was like, that's got a chance. I caught it perfectly. I mean, sometimes when you see these long range efforts, you see them sort of start in the middle of the goal and then bend out. And that's a miss hit. You know, people don't mean to do that. They've sort of sliced across the ball and they've just got lucky, where this one was just an absolute missile into the top corner.
It was an unforgettable goal, and we've got to cut this short. We have got 90 seconds left of the show, and I've got to play out the fair fade-out music. So we'll catch you next week because we'll be playing part of the 2006 reunion. And that was great to speak to all you lads, and we'll be hearing from you there. And just to thank you for coming on tonight and just talking us through some of your thoughts about the game and a bit of your career, not as much as we'd like to cover. So we'll have to get you back on another time for that. But thanks for joining us, Matt.
No, my pleasure. It's great to speak to you guys.
Take care, mate.
Cheers,
bye-bye.
Mate. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
Well, that was Matt, and that's us. Thanks, Darren. Thank you. Who are you? Barry.
That's the one.
That's it. That's the one. We'll catch you next week, folks.
It ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10, and you're gonna hear rocking all over the world again. There's flats in every corner of the ground. You can get your kids in just £5. Get an orienteer. It's only a quid. Get a cup of tea, but there ain't no lids, 'cause it's an Upton Park. Brisbane Road, it ain't White Hart Lane. That's a wrong postcode, it ain't Stamford Bridge. This is E10.